Ich warte seit Wochen auf diesen Tag und tanz vor Freude über den Asphalt. Als wär's ein Rhythmus, als gäb's ein Lied, das mich immer weiter durch die Straßen zieht. Komm dir entgegen.
Hallo und willkommen zu Gegenpressing, der Bundesliga-Podcast vom The Football Grad Network. I'm your host Manuel Feit, and you know I'm super excited to do this because it's been an extremely busy week, an extremely busy day. Full-time job, of course, at Transfermarkt, doing all the Major League Soccer market value updates, covering MLS Decision Day, being on the road again, traveling, and I just need a short break talking about German football, and I'm just so happy I can take a few minutes out of my day to do just that. And I'm glad that Stefan Biankowski is here as well to chat to me about German football, because I know, Stefan, you're probably extremely busy as well with whatever's going on in your life. And this is just like a short little like Zen cast thing going on here, where we can just talk about German football, vent a little bit, discuss what's going on. And there's lots of stuff going on. So here we are. How's it going?
Yeah, very well. I mean, I think we both have very similar jobs to an extent. So it is nice to kind of take a break from time to time, talk some Bundesliga, have a chat, make a few jokes, hopefully entertain some people as well, because that's what it's all about. At the end of the day, it's supposed to be a league that entertains, even if Bayern Munich do their best to ruin that. But we still enjoy it. I say that's a lie. Even if Dortmund do their best to ruin it, that's more accurate.
Yeah, I actually think the culprit right now is Dortmund, because I think the rest of the league is doing their very best to make it interesting. And, you know, we're only going to touch briefly on Bayern Munich, I think, this week, because they get a lot of attention and they are a brilliant side. They're probably the best club side in the world. Who are we kidding? And they play some amazing football. And I thought Freiburg did their very best to keep it close and probably maybe could have taken 2 points off Bayern Munich. Yeah. Not that it would have mattered, because Dortmund in their very best or very worst at the moment are losing to Leipzig, a team that we're going to talk about and should probably talk about first, because Jesse Marsch, Leipzig are up in fifth. They did not have a great start, Stefan. And, you know, you have to give Jesse a lot of credit. There's a big article in Kicker on Monday about how he's turned things around, working with some of the senior players at the club. And he had some real struggles to start the season, probably underestimating this competition a little bit. And he's really turned things around, hasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's probably quite hard to tell exactly where he did it. I mean, you could definitely look on paper and say, well, that's when the results started going better, because, I mean, okay, sure, maybe you could go all the way back to that 1-1 draw with Cologne. And then obviously they thumped Hertha Berlin 6-0. But, you know, the games that have kind of made me kind of sit up and notice and think something maybe has changed here are actually the matches against PSG. Because even though they lost the first encounter 3-2, and then, you know, they ended up having to claw back a last-minute goal, I think, in the 2-2 draw, what we saw in both those games were a team that looked far more coherent in attack. And what really intrigued me was that Leipzig's XG from both those games was actually much higher than the XG had been in the Bundesliga to that point. And also their conceded XG, so they're creating more chances, conceding fewer. In those two games against a PSG side that many people think should go on to kind of challenge in the Champions League, whether they're actually showing that kind of form right now is a different conversation for a different podcast. But, you know, I think we saw kind of hints of what Leipzig were capable of. Obviously, the immense amount of firepower that they have. And I thought it was quite interesting when I looked at that, when I looked at those two kind of starting 11s ahead of the top spiel on Saturday, I did think, and I actually tweeted this out as well, to be fair, on paper, Leipzig had the better team. And that's basically what ended up happening in the match. Nkunku, for me, possibly player of the season at the moment, in terms of just what he does, pound for pound, what he offers a team. he and you know, there are certain players who've kind of grown into their roles under Marsh, and you know, as the team have gotten better, I think Nkunku has been great from day one. He was great despite Leipzig's form at the start of the season. He looked like a man on fire against Dortmund. Obviously got a great goal, but he also did that fantastic bit of skill where he did two kind of turns and then hit the post. He was playing with Dortmund at times. He made Dortmund look very old, look very tired, look very out of ideas. And, you know, I had a lot, I was making some comments about how, you know, troubled Dortmund look. And to be fair, I had a lot of Dortmund fans saying, look, we have 8 or 9 first team players missing this game. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and maybe we can go talk about Dortmund in a minute. We can maybe stick on Leipzig for a minute. But, yeah, there's a lot of issues there, and I think Leipzig could look much better now, kind of underlined a lot of those issues. I mean, what did you think of Leipzig?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that Paulsen and Forsberg seem to have taken quite a big role to sort of help Marsh settling in. Mm-hmm. And that shows leadership, right? That you say, like, okay, this coach didn't have the best of start. A lot of dressing rooms would probably torpedo their new head coach at this point, right? And they kind of did the opposite. And that speaks volumes for the chemistry inside that dressing room, in my opinion, that players say, like, no, look, this is a good coach and we have to help him, rather than, or this coach, we don't like his tactics, let's get rid of him. Mm-hmm. And I think that's actually, that's a great sign. It also speaks well for Marsh, who's obviously one of the most likable characters in the game, period. He's actually a really nice guy, and it's really hard to criticize him at times because of it, because that's one of his biggest traits. And I think he is turning things around, and he's turning things around while also slowly actually getting the style of play figured out, right? What he's done with Nkunku, and maybe we should have taken notice of that earlier, Stefan, that because Nkunku has started playing well already last year, but he's getting a lot out of this player. What's very noticeable is the 5 goals in 4 Champions League games, right? He scores there every 70 minutes, 5 goals and 5 assists in 11 Bundesliga games. He is in fantastic form. And of course, that role as a center forward that he's played against Dortmund, which I thought was really interesting as well, should have been occupied by André Silva, who is not getting into the squad at the moment. And I still think there is a big role to play for André Silva down the stretch. I think Marsh is still sort of feeling out how to put this team together. Mm-hmm. I think the thing with Leipzig for me is that they have such an enormous potential. And I stick with my early season sentiment that on paper, they, you know, despite losing all these players that they've lost, I think they still have maybe a top two, maybe even a squad that can rival Bayern's. And I think it's just the gelling in process that hurt them. Mm. And it probably hurt them too much to mount a title challenge this year. I think they will finish in the top four. They're trending in the right direction, right? I do think that Freiburg eventually will drop out of there, and Wolfsburg and Leipzig will probably occupy those top four spots. I do think that Bayern now are going to probably run away with the title because of what's going on with Dortmund. But Leipzig have really put it together. And I think that's very impressive, Stefan.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I did kind of get a little excited when I was kind of watching this Leipzig side tear Dortmund apart. And when you just look at the bench that they have, I mean, you mentioned André Silva there. I think one of the big differences in their turn in form has been Marsh deciding to just put Silva back on the bench and say, look, your time will come. But for now, I need to stick with Paulsen. I need to stick with Forsberg. I know Forsberg didn't start the game, but I have to kind of stick with these more trusted players. Nkunku is a perfect example of that, Angelino as well. But what that means is, while Dortmund are having to turn to players like Reiner or even Mukoko, who, let's be honest, hasn't really set things on alight since he came into the first team, which is not his fault, but, you know, at the end of the day, Dortmund really maybe shouldn't be relying on this 17-year-old player, 16-year-old player. And you look at Leipzig, they've got André Silva, they've got Forsberg, they've got Danny Olmo, you know, Kevin Campbell didn't even get a game. And then before, even after that, you've got Brian Brobbey, who hasn't even really got going at Leipzig this season. So if you were asking me which team looked capable of maybe kind of putting together some real serious form between now and perhaps the winter break, it would have to be Leipzig, because despite that poor run of form, they've got so much talent in that team. If this is really the start of Marsh kind of getting his handle on this squad, it's really quite exciting because they do have the depth to challenge Bayern in the long run, I think. Maybe not, like you said, this season. There's maybe too much now to catch up on them. But, you know, it's really exciting for Leipzig, I think. And I think it also underlines the issues that Dortmund have as well in terms of the depth, in terms of the players that they do or don't have, the kind of players that they're still so reliant on. You know, I think, like I mentioned earlier, a lot of Dortmund fans were saying to me, look, we weren't, we were missing quite a lot of players, but they were. But the kind of people that stood out to me who were kind of really underperforming in that match, it wasn't Hazard at left back or even Meunier, maybe right wing back, whatever. It was Mats Hummels, it was Akanji, it was Malin. These are all first team players. These are players who should be starting every week, and they looked very poor. So, you know, maybe you could make an argument Dortmund were just, you know, blowing a run out of steam because they were missing so many first team players. But in my opinion, this is a game in which a lot of Dortmund's key players, a lot of Dortmund's senior players, didn't really step up for them. Whereas with Leipzig, they've almost got too many, and they've got plenty of players who are happy to come off the bench and really cause some damage.
Maybe final thought about Leipzig before we do talk about Dortmund. 11 goals conceded. 4 of those came against Bayern. That means they're second in goals conceded in the league, together with Bayern Munich and Mainz. And the only team that has conceded less goals than them is Freiburg. So, you know, when you take a look at that statistic, Marsch is really turning things around, especially when you subtract those 4 against Bayern. I think then, you know, you actually look at that and say, that's actually pretty good. But yeah, Dortmund, and I have a lot of thoughts about Borussia Dortmund. And I think the 2 games against Ajax is what has me worried, because I think they are the true benchmark of where this Borussia Dortmund team is. And Ajax are a top-class team at the moment in European football. You know, they play the sort of football that Bayern Munich play, which is, of course, even more worrying for Borussia Dortmund, because, of course, they played Bayern in early December. And in that form, that is going to be a bad day for German football in general, because every time Bayern smash Dortmund, it's a bad day for German football, right? Because it gets noticed around the world, and Bayern will smash Dortmund. I'm saying that right now. If they play like this, they will get absolutely destroyed. And there is some mitigating factors in the second game against Ajax. And despite those mitigating factors, or even especially those mitigating factors, is what has me worried about this Dortmund side, because you look at someone like Mats Hummels, and Dortmund fans are going to absolutely hate me for this. I think it was definitely not a red card. That was a huge mistake by UEFA, and the way they've set the benchmark for VAR, that's on them. You know, the fact that they can't look at this because of the way VAR is being used in UEFA this season, that's 100% on them, and it should have been looked at, and it should have been overturned. It didn't. It only got checked, right? Mm. And that is important here to note, that VAR didn't even come into play. There was a check, there was a silent check, and because, you know, they didn't see it as a clear and obvious error, it went through, and that's a mistake. But if you're an experienced defender, one of the most important players in your team, and you choose to go into a tackle like that against a player like Antonio at the center half line, you're asking for trouble. And this is where it got to me. I think maybe the red card is definitely what warranted, but an experienced defender shouldn't be going into the challenge there. And Hummels is absolutely right, criticizing Antonio afterwards and saying, you know, he's a great player, he needs to learn to be a great sportsman. 100%, he's 100% correct about all of this. The Dortmund fans, they're all correct about him being upset about it. But why go in a challenge there? Why? Why do it, Stefan? And that's, I think, where my criticism is with Mats Hummels, that he potentially put his team into a bad situation that, yes, normally he would get away with. But what if he hits a player there?
Yeah. You know, I had a great conversation with someone on Twitter after the game on Saturday about this. And, you know, I think we kind of both kind of came to the same conclusion. I think it was actually quite an accurate one, that with Hummels now, with the lack of pace that he has, or I guess doesn't have, I suppose, a better term, you know, what we find is that he plays so deep, and this is quite telling for the for a lot of the Leipzig chances, where, you know, it usually looks like Akanji is the one who's kind of out of place, doesn't know where he's going, but usually that's because he can't push up with Hummels because Hummels sits so deep. But then also, what we tend to find with Hummels these days is that because he doesn't have the pace to maybe go out to meet a player and then follow them, he has to kind of make these 50-50 challenges because he has to either decide, either has to decide I'm dropping deep or I have to go win that ball at the first chance. And obviously that's what happened against Ajax. I didn't personally think it was that bad of a call. I mean, maybe that'll lead to me get all sorts of abuse on Twitter from Dortmund fans, but
I thought it was a red.
Yeah, and in real time, I mean, in real time,
I thought it was a red.
Both feet off the ground, studs are quite high. You know, you can take screenshots and argue all you want. I honestly don't really care, to be honest with you. I don't really see the point in making a big deal about these referee decisions. I know Dortmund are going to appeal it, and they probably will manage to appeal it, but either way, I think it's actually quite a good example of Mats Hummels' inabilities as a player at this stage in his career, because he is forced to make these kind of rash challenges when he does go out to try and meet a player, or he does go out to meet the ball. And I think he does hold back this Dortmund team quite a lot because of that. You know, I kind of made that point on Twitter. I said, you know, I thought he had a really good season last year. I thought he deserved to go to the Euros with Germany, but this time around, he's really struggling. I think I made a point at the podcast a week ago or maybe before that that, you know, he hasn't really, I don't think he's finished a single game in the Bundesliga this season. Perhaps he has. He obviously comes off whenever he can. As soon as Dortmund maybe got two or three goals up, he's usually the first player to come off. He's got muscle injuries. Sometimes when players get into these situations and the club itself and maybe the manager himself aren't willing to say, look, maybe it's time for you to, I'm not saying he has to retire. I'm not going that far, obviously, but maybe it's getting to the point where they have to have a very stark conversation here. Maybe Dortmund do and say, look, maybe we need to go out and find another centre-back in January to try and fix this problem, because it does strike me as one of the key problems. I know Dortmund have an issue with replacing Haaland, and I know they've got guys like Julian Brandt or Meunier, whoever else, like kind of, and don't even get me started on Malen. But this does strike me as an issue that happens every single game, and because Hummels is still so crucial to this team, it is a problem that seems to happen most weeks.
You know, that's maybe a difference between Bayern and Dortmund there as well, that Bayern Munich, despite Jerome Boateng, and I know there's so much going on in Boateng's life, and I wish him all the best, and I hope that he figures it all out where he's playing now in Olympique Lyon, but Boateng had a really good year last year for Bayern Munich. And regardless, Bayern said, this is it. We have to move on. We have to get younger. You know, we need to bring in fresh blood. And there's growing pain with Upamecano. You can tell me whatever you want. I know you and I basically agree on this, but anyone else, you can tell me whatever you want. Upamecano is not the defender that he one day will become. There is issues with him playing it back. But Bayern Munich risked that anyways. And they said, like, this is the guy that we need. And while Bayern Munich made this decision, and it was a difficult decision because they got rid of David Alaba as well, right? And they also said, like, look, sometimes you have to cut yourself in order to heal. And they made that call. And I think Dortmund, sometimes they're a little bit too nostalgic. And I think in this case, Hummels had a great year last year, absolutely. And he then went to play the Euros. And in fairness, he did miss time in the summer with injuries. And that does hurt a player, right? And it hurts his fitness. And maybe he will turn around. But, you know, Stefan, I think even if he does turn around, that hard talk might need to happen, because they're not going to get a fee for him. That's just the reality of it. But he does take up a lot of the salary. And that salary can be used elsewhere. And I think both of us made the point that instead of bringing in another attacking player, maybe Dortmund need to bring in the defender and maybe someone not named Pongracic, you know, maybe an actual useful defender. And it's difficult to replace defenders or find defenders on the market. It's not like the market is saturated with world-class defenders. It's why Bayern Munich spent 45 million euros on an unfinished product, or you know, a club like Manchester United spend 80 million on Maguire, you know, because defenders are rare. Mm. Even bad ones are expensive. And I think that's where Dortmund need to really take a long, hard look at themselves. And should Haaland go? I know that's gone from 100% likely to maybe not quite so likely anymore, but should he go? I think that's where the money needs to be invested. It needs to be a defender, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think it has to happen before Haaland potentially goes. If they have 20 or 30, I know it's not very common for German teams to do something like this, but if they have 20, 30 million euros behind a couch somewhere, I would throw it at a young defender in the Bundesliga. I don't know. Maybe you bring back Matthias Ginter. I don't know. Something like that. Because even just in terms of depth, they need something in there. They cannot pretend to be challenging for a Bundesliga title race with Mats Hummels in the form he's in right now and Emre Can filling in most weeks at centre back. It's just not a good way of running a club, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm gonna say a name, or maybe two. And it's Jeremiah Sanjuste and Musa Niakhate. You know, that's two defenders that I would potentially target. Yeah. And that's not a rumor. Please don't go on Twitter and say Manuel Feit from Transfermarkt is saying Dortmund are linked with Niakhate and Sanjuste. That's just me name dropping, okay? Because I know that in my position, where I work, this turns into a rumor quickly. It's not. I haven't heard anything in that regard. It's just a suggestion. But that's what I would do if I was Dortmund. I would target one of those two guys because they play in Germany. They adjusted to the league. And Mainz is a great feeder club for Borussia Dortmund. And I don't mean that in any bad way. It's just how it is, right? And both those defenders would probably bring what Dortmund need at the moment.
Yeah, if I could name another one, actually. We were talking about him before we started recording because he pulled out of the national team, and he has been linked with Dortmund in the last couple of months, but I think Schlotterbeck would be a great example.
Good
of
call.
Okay, maybe he's not a top-tier defender. Maybe he will, we don't know, but he's a solid Bundesliga defender, one they could probably pick up for 20 million euros or something like that. He's not going to break the bank, but he comes into that team. He's got experience in the Bundesliga. He offers depth, you know, something like that. He's obviously part of a very, very good Freiburg side as well. Mm-hmm. So that would be my kind of recommendation.
Yeah. Another name would be Philipp Lienhardt from Freiburg. Again, we're just speculating, just having fun.
Maybe they should just buy the Freiburg defense. That would fix things.
Yeah, you know, as I said, one of the best defense in the Bundesliga at the moment.
And the head coach too, possibly.
Ooh. Christian Streich did say that you can never say that a transfer won't happen, but he thinks it's very unlikely.
Of course.
I think he is a Freiburg. You know, they probably have to carry him out of this club to make that happen. but yeah, we're just having fun. We're essentially playing Football Manager here. These are just names dropped. Speaking of Football Manager, you know when you buy a really expensive player for Football Manager because you have like a cheat code on and then you don't really need this guy, but you just bought him because you fancied him. And so you just put him on wing back. What do you make of that? I saw that today. I know we usually don't talk about the Premier League, but you have to be a special club to put Jadon Sancho at wing back, don't you?
Oh, a special club indeed. a very entertaining club from my point of view. You know, I do wonder when we will get to the point when Jadon Sancho is a genuine, realistic transfer target for Dortmund next summer, because Manchester United could not be doing any more to convince him that the move he made last summer was a terrible decision. And, you know, it could just be like a Shinji Kagawa situation all over again, or Mario Götze to Bayern, where these players move on and then a couple of years later they realise that the grass wasn't greener, because Jadon Sancho would be exactly what Borussia Dortmund... I know we just spent 10 minutes talking about the defence, but they could certainly use him in place of Malin. Maybe they could swap. Maybe Malin could try playing wing-back at Man United.
Yeah, I think what United need is a coach. But, you know, that will probably go a long way. Maybe Ralf Rangnick will finally fix the Red Devils. I saw that today, and it was at 6 o'clock in the morning when I got up to double-check and triple-check that everything is okay before we post the market values. And I had to actually two or three times read your tweet to make sure that that's what you actually wrote. And yeah, and then I had to double check it with other sources. Not that I don't trust you, Stefan, it just seems so ridiculous. And yeah, I mean,
let's be honest, Man United aren't nearly smart enough to hire someone like Ralf Rangnick to fix that, because Ralf Rangnick probably could fix that club. Mm-hmm. He could make Man United absolutely terrifying. Because yeah, you're talking about a club there that probably has the second or third highest spending power in the world, if you want to put it that way. Mm. But obviously, it's just going to run by fools at the moment. So,
and he would do it. 100% he would do it. I know he has that consultancy contract with Lokomotiv Moscow, but speaking to some people in Russia, it's quite flexible. He could do it. Take a role at Manchester United, because the idea is that what he's sort of floating is that he would go and coach the club until the end of the season and then move into a director role, right? And he would 100% do that. The question becomes, would the people that make decisions at Manchester United support that? And I think this is where, you know, you're much closer to the Premier League than I am and to clubs like Manchester United, but Rangnick isn't an easy character. He's a great, he's probably one of the most brilliant minds in football in the world, but he's not an easy character. And he would probably throw out most people that work at United at the moment, rightfully so, in my opinion. But who wants that? Who's going to hire the guy that is going to fire you?
Yeah, exactly. Who's going to let the fox into the chicken hen?
Yeah, and that's what needs to happen there, though, right?
Absolutely, yeah. But that's, and a lot of clubs don't want to do that. But yeah, again, I was joking with someone on Twitter saying they should hire Rangnick and then he could bring in Ralf Hasenhüttl as the head coach, and then then we could just see how that worked. I think they'd be really good together. But obviously, could you imagine trying to explain to a Premier League fan why you would bring this guy from Moscow in to hire the Southampton manager to fix things at Man United?
Oh man, that would be a scary prospect. Let's hope it never happens, because all my Manchester United supporting friends will be insufferable. It's much better that they lose all the time. That's just, I have nothing against Manchester United. I just have a lot of insufferable Manchester United fans as friends. And, you know, as a neutral, it seems just that my Liverpool supporting friends are much nicer about stuff. So, sorry, guys. We're veering way off topic. We're talking about the Premier League, but I do think it's interesting. And I think the best thing that could happen to Manchester United is Ralf Rangnick to come in and fix the club. And if he does come in, I think they have a really interesting few months ahead of them. And it could be something that could change the club forever. Let's talk about where Rangnick was mentioned. And that was the Germany job. Of course, he didn't take it. And Hansi Flick took over. And Hansi Flick, perfect start, 5 games, 5 wins, has turned a German national team that always had the quality, but never really the cohesiveness over the 4 years, back into a team that, in my opinion, by rights can say, we can win the World Cup. I think Germany will be one of the favorites going into the World Cup next year, based only on what Hansi Flick has done. And you know, we can talk about the games against Armenia and Liechtenstein, but who cares? They've qualified. Those are two glorified friendlies. So instead, I think we should talk about some of the players that have come in. And we're going to talk about the whole COVID-19 thing in a moment, because it's really interesting. But before we talk about the negative, let's talk about the positive. And that's Lukas Nemtsa, who comes in from Wolfsburg. And under Florian Kohfeldt, both you and I had some reservations about Kohfeldt going in, but I actually think he's kind of proving us wrong in the early goings. Mm-hmm. Great against Salzburg, great in the league, and he's getting a ton out of Lukas Nemtsa, who I always thought had the potential, showed it at the U21, is in my opinion the center forward that Germany need, and he's finally called up to the German national team, and I'm pretty sure Flick will play him because it is two glorified friendlies. I'm excited to see him for the senior team, Stefan.
Yeah, I am too, actually. You know, it's really interesting the way that he has kind of just kind of slowly but surely hit the ground running at Wolfsburg and just kind of got on with doing what he does best, which is score goals. You know, I've watched Wolfsburg quite sporadically this season, but to say that he's already got 6 goals in 15 games is quite impressive. And the goal he scored at the weekend against Augsburg was tremendous. It's this really powerful front post header. And then, you know, he obviously did very well against Salzburg. I thought that was a really interesting game because I know you're a big Adeyemi fan and I know he's a good player, but I actually thought Nche kind of, he kind of came into this match and he kind of stole the show, I thought. You know, all the kind of lights were on Adeyemi. Adeyemi had a few chances. He kind of fluffed his lines. Mm. And then this kind of other young German player kind of comes out of the shadows and ends up scoring the goal. And I've just really enjoyed watching him. And I told you before we started recording that I had one kind of comparison to a former German striker. And I wonder what you think about this. Kind of reminds me a bit of Mario Gomez. Oh. In the sense that you know, he's just that kind of classic number 9. He's got a bit of pace about him, but most of all, he's got that frame where he can kind of battle against centre backs. He can head balls in great. But then, as we kind of also saw that goal he scored against Leverkusen a few weeks ago, he's also just a great penalty box finisher. You know, so I think him and Weghorst up front for Wolfsburg are just two absolute battering rams. Which is really exciting to watch. But yeah, that's I don't know why that's popped into my head this season, but the last couple of times I've watched him, I thought he reminds me almost like a kind of young Mario Gomez. Is that weird? Is that a daft comparison?
No, but I'm now that you mention it, it is a similar frame, isn't it? And he is very athletic, very strong. He provides the types of player that we need in Germany, because we don't have a player like that since Mario Gomez. And remember at Euro 2016, where Germany were excellent until the semi-final against France, where Gomez was out with an injury, and that probably cost Germany the final in that tournament. Mm-hmm. Playing with a proper center forward has become very important for national teams. It's gotten a real renaissance. And I think that was the one element that has been really missing for Germany. Because Timo Werner is not it. Timo Werner has on his day good attacking elements, but he's not a center forward in the traditional sense. And Kai Havertz, who's been excellent in the Premier League, you know, has all the tools to become one of the world's best players. He's not a center forward either. We need a center forward. We need a play guy like Karim Benzema, right? And Nemcha is it. I'm actually, you know, I'm going to go even further and say he is it. He is the answer to all those problems. And that's why I'm so excited that he's playing well for Wolfsburg, because that's his second run in the Bundesliga and didn't quite work out so well for the first time. And center forwards need a little bit more time to develop, right? He's 22. It's not unusual for players of that size and stature to take a little bit more time. And I say 22, that's still very young. And I think he's it. It's all in on him. And that's a lot of pressure, but I think he has the tools to do it. And I think it's very exciting. And it's exciting that he emerges, because we talked about Adeyemi. And you're right, I do watch Salzburg a lot. And I'm very high on Adeyemi. And I'm very high on the Salzburg team, period. And Wolfsburg were excellent against them. And that group looks like really exciting. It's probably the most exciting Champions League group left in terms of where it's going to finish. And those two players will play a very big role in determining how the group will end. And I think at Adeyemi in Nemcha, Germany all of a sudden has two players that we didn't have for a long time. And those two up front, it's actually a good question. What's going to happen with Timo Werner, right, Stefan? Because all of a sudden, there's not one competitor for that position. There's two. And I think Werner might be in trouble.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I'm still a big Werner fan. I think he's also been doing the business for Germany for the last kind of 12 months when he hasn't been doing it for Chelsea. Now, I say last 12 months, he obviously didn't get much of a shot at it in the Euros, but I still think he's got a huge amount to offer as a player. you know, I think Thomas Tuchel still rates him a lot for Chelsea, even though he's obviously picked up injuries and things and he's not going to be taking part in this international break. Another name I'd probably throw into the hat there for that kind of position is actually Kai Havertz, because he's kind of developing into something of a kind of number nine for Chelsea this season, because Lukaku and Werner have both been out with injuries. And, you know, even though he is quite slight in frame and he kind of reminds me of Timothy Chalamet, the actor, he knows how to head a ball and he's quite happy to lead a line. Maybe he'll never be a kind of classic striker or a classic number nine like we, like Germany maybe need. It's maybe more like a Thomas Müller. But I'm not going to just kind of write off Werner just yet. But like you say, it's really encouraging that they have all of a sudden got maybe, what, four strikers who they can work on. I don't think for a second that Hansi Flick has given up on, for example, Werner or Havertz. But like the way Flick does so well, he'll mould youth into that just as well as he will kind of offer assurances to kind of senior players. So it's exciting. It's a lot more exciting than maybe what we were expecting from Germany maybe 6 months ago, when it really looked like they were going to go through a real dry spell up front, but and they were so reliant on Thomas Müller. But now if you kind of look at the players in those attacking positions, even Julian Draxler, if you want to include him, which is the most bizarre call-up. But going from a nation that basically had to beg Thomas Müller to come back and play the Euros, you've now got three or four very young to medium to kind of, you know, mid-20s players who could all certainly do a very good job.
Yeah, I think the question is, why couldn't Joachim Löw do that? But, I mean, that answers probably more about Joachim Löw than anything else. Before we wrap it up, the negative about this, and, you know, we talked about Kimmich in great lengths, and he's not needed for those two games against Liechtenstein and Armenia. We'll be kidding. But this situation was always going to come up where COVID gets into the room, in the dressing room, and he will have to quarantine because he's not vaccinated. And that's his decision. I personally think, and it's coming to Germany because of the rates are very high, 2G tested and recovered from the virus. Is going to be a reality very soon there. And it's probably going to also hit clubs. So Bayern Munich might find themselves with a huge problem there, because if Kimmich isn't vaccinated, you might see a similar situation as you have in the North American sports, that players then might not feature. Aaron Rodgers comes to mind. I'm pretty sure everyone has followed that story closely. We got alternative treatment in Canada. I don't know what that is, Stefan. If anyone asked me about alternative treatment, maybe he meant AstraZeneca. I don't know.
I saw something on Twitter, which I'm not sure if it was true or not, but if it is true, it just shows how stupid athletes can be sometimes, that basically he refused to get the jab, but he was happy to get it through, you know, sometimes athletes get these kind of rejuvenation treatments when they take the blood out, they fill it with vitamins, and they put the blood back in. It's quite commonplace in European football, actually. But he was happy to get the vaccine through that system. Which I like. Literally, the only difference is how it literally gets inside your body. But athletes are very superstitious people, aren't they?
Yes, difficult. And, of course, the situation now is very difficult because four players got sent home. First of all, I think there was a few interesting things in this, because Adeyemi apparently lives in Munich, because he falls under the Bavarian health authorities, which shows me that he lives in Munich and not in Salzburg. Of course, those two cities are very close together. You can all start speculating again that he's a Munich boy and he lives there already. So a move to Bayern Munich is imminent. That's not what I'm saying. But it's interesting that he now, together with Gnabry and Musiala, and Kimmich, of course, because he's not vaccinated, they all have to go into 2-week quarantine. Kimmich isn't vaccinated. I don't know the status of Adeyemi, and I know the status of all Bayern players. And I know that one of the two probably will be able to test themselves out of this situation. This is all I'm going to say about this, because, again, this is not my story and I don't have the legal authorities of Bild. I keep watch Bild. They have the list. I'm pretty sure they, maybe by the time this podcast comes out, they will say who the unvaccinated is. and then we can talk about it or not. But it is interesting because like Kimmich has put those his teammates into a difficult situation, right? And they are going to miss 2 weeks now. And I think that is... That's unfortunate. And I do think that maybe Germany, you know, when they go, you can't tell the spectators we're going to 2G and then the players. I guess the players now might all get it now, so they will fall onto the 2G. But Stefan, that's just maybe my final point on this. I think you can't tell spectators you can't go into the stadium unless you're vaccinated or you have recovered. And then there's players down there who are fully unvaccinated and never had the virus.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this unfortunately is maybe the worst case, well, maybe the worst case scenario, but this is maybe the consequence of Kimmich's actions to not get vaccinated, in the sense that it means that, you know, it limits what he can do on an international level. And this is always going to happen for footballers that don't get vaccinated. And there are still a long, long list of footballers who haven't been properly vaccinated. We don't know which ones they are. They obviously aren't making it public. The clubs are obviously doing their best to keep these things behind closed doors. But, you know, when you are, I mean, maybe there are certain jobs or lifestyles where you don't have to get vaccinated because you live in a hut in the middle of the woods or in the middle of the desert. You never see people. But people like Joshua Kimmich very literally work in teams every day in close contact with people.
Yeah.
And he's doing a huge amount of traveling as well. If you just think about how much traveling footballers do, it's remarkable. So for him not to get vaccinated, then, you know, there's no point debating whether he should or shouldn't, or, you know, if it's personal choice or not.
Mm-hmm. This is a personal choice, right? I mean, at the end of the day, it's a personal choice.
Exactly. But these are the consequences of that decision, and that's it really.
And I get this all the time. People telling me it's your personal choice, and it is. It is 100% your personal choice to get vaccinated or not, and I 100% agree with that. But it's also, you know, at the end of the day, personal choices have consequences, and it is not a human right to go to a restaurant. It's not a human right to go to a stadium. It's not a human right to go to a cinema. It's not a human right to go to a bar. It's not a human right to get your hair cut, believe it or not. You know, there is certain things that then should be off limit for a while, because we're dealing with this all together. And I think this is where I think where people sometimes get confused. Like, it's not a right. You have the right not to wear a seatbelt, but it does mean that you're not allowed to drive the car. you have the right not to have a driver's license. You know, you have the right to drive without winter tires in the winter, but then you will get a fine. It's all the same things. It's all exactly the same thing. We have regulations for all those stuff, you know, and at the end of the day, yes, it's your own personal choice, but every single personal choice comes with consequences. I think that's maybe my final point on this, because this will all be over one day, and then if all this stuff will be over, we will all be able to go back to our normal lives without restrictions. And these are restrictions, and some people have chosen to go down a path where restrictions lift earlier for them than for others. That's my take on this, and for everyone else, stay healthy, Stefan. I think that's
I was going to say, it's as good a message as any to end the podcast on.
Yeah, just stay healthy, and we'll be back soon. This has been 42 minutes. It's been fun. I enjoyed this. I'm always happy to chat with you about German football, and this took my mind off like all this work stuff. Unfortunately, work is calling, so we both need to go back to it. But hey, Stefan, this was fun. And anything you want to give a shout out before we leave?
No, not really. I'm now thinking maybe we should start our own Manchester United podcast and just spend every episode talking about all the stupid things the club could or couldn't do. That sounds quite fun to me. Maybe we should workshop and have a good think about it over the international break.
Yes, we should. That sounds like a good plan. Okay, until then, guys, let's give it a wrap. Auf Wiedersehen. In sich.